My name's Paul Tolley and I'm delighted to have the Mayor of Armidale Regional Council in the studio with me, and we're going to start our usual conversations, but the first one for this year. Good morning, Sam. No, well, good afternoon, in fact.
Yeah, good afternoon, Paul. It's great to be back after
Well, did you manage to get a break and spend any time with the family over the holiday?
I did. Probably too much. No. We did. We're lucky. I had a brother out. He was overseas. He came in. We had Christmas with him. We had a brief stint at the Gold Coast with my wife's family and extended family, so that was good. That said, the relief when school holidays finished was huge for Caroline and I. It's been really good to get back to work.
It's nice to share the load with the school, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, let's start off with a fairly easy one. What are you and council looking forward to this year, 2024, briefly? Is there anything that you're hoping for?
Well, this term of council will pretty much finish in August. We go into caretaker mode. I think, and this is what we were warned as new councillors coming in, that this particular term, whilst it was a shortened one, it's about setting ourselves up for, or setting the region up. So we had a lot of planning is what's been done. But for 2024, what I really would like to see more of, and it's probably building on 2023, is attendance at all of these community events. I want to really make them sing. I think we finished 2023 with a real bang with the Christmas in the mall.
Well, I'm going to go there, so hold
okay,
that.
Okay, we'll hold that. But we've got a lot of things coming up. We have, it was going to be in March, but it's now going to be pushed out to April, the opening of Jimmerick Dam, or the official opening.
Yes.
So
you've had the soft opening.
We've had the soft opening, and it's just getting better and better out there as things go. But we have the Autumn Festival on the 6th of April. And that's going to be bigger and better than last year, which was a build from previous. So we're looking forward to that. A week later, on the 13th of April, will be the formal opening of Jimmerick Dam. There's a bit of a surprise in there.
Right.
Could very well be a lolly drop from a crop duster.
Well, hold that thought, because we'll do that when we get closer to it. What are you and council worried about for 2024?
Oh, look, water's always going to be a bit of a worry.
We're going to go there.
Oh, we're going to go there as well. Okay. Water is one. The other one is probably housing with the res coming along, the renewable energy zone. So there's a lot of noise being made by the state government and an energy co, etc. We know the timelines for these things. It's getting closer. We're probably 2 years, and we need to have real clarity about how we're going to house all of these people when our region becomes high-vis central. So I am personally worried about that transition. Now, it can be solved if we throw money at a problem. So I just need... It's not going as smoothly in the Central West, which is the first renewable energy zone off the first cab off the rank. So hopefully a few of the kinks there will be ironed out.
All right, well, let's talk about that later as well. So your first council meeting of the year was the extraordinary council meeting, 24th January. Only one purpose, really, presentation of audited financial statements, etc. 6 months after the event, it did strike me that was a little slow. It takes a long time for that to go through. It would normally be a quicker process, wouldn't it?
It would. So what had happened is that the statements, I think, were going to be ready by the end of September, and actually were. Then this is where the historic mismanagement or weaknesses have come from. We found during the audit process and the review for those financials about $50,000 individual assets, in inverted commas, had been discovered that hadn't been accounted for. So those assets are things like...
You mean you had an incomplete asset list?
Yes. So we have an incomplete asset list. Mm-hmm. And this includes things like some extra guttering when a development's done. So, you know, curb and guttering or a bit of footpath. It was those sorts of things. It wasn't like a million-dollar front-end loader and a brand-new road. But there were 50,000 individual little bits and pieces that weren't in the centralised register. So we had to go through and redo the financials for that reason.
So that's why it took you
That's why it took
months.
Us a little right. Yeah, so that's why it added a few months onto the standard.
Presentation.
Yeah.
There was some good news. I mean, I was looking down here, rate and annual charges revenue up 4.8, almost 5%. Grants and contributions revenue up 72.5%.
Yeah, that's the... and this is where the figures are a little bit of an anomaly because that's largely the Kempsey Road.
I did see that, yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, the grants...
Well, the Kempsey Road put you down a little in some areas, but these are the two that went up.
Yeah,
up.
So it's timing issues with the yeah. Kempsey Road. So you get your funding... might come in and we can't account for it as a discrete project. Now, it's huge. At the moment, the funding for that is $408 million.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So you get the funding and then until you spend it and reconcile it, it's sitting in a bank account.
It's sitting in the bank account. Yeah. So we have, I think as at the moment, council has about $12 million in the bank, which we usually carry about that sort of level. And I think we have $117 million in investments, which is really term deposits. A reasonable chunk of those investments, this $117 million, that's the vast majority of that are grants received for discrete project. So it's
waiting to be spent.
It's waiting to be spent.
All right, going back to your comments earlier about events, the inaugural Pride in the Park event was held in Curtis Park last Friday, and the New South Wales Governor General Margaret Beasley attended. And I noted a recognition of the diversity of our community that not so many years ago probably wouldn't have taken place in being so welcome. And then I was thinking about Armidale welcoming the Yazidi immigrants, now the Pride Parade. Armidale is showing increasing tolerance of diversity, isn't it? So where's council's role in this?
I think to embrace diversity or probably just be diversity blind. Well, you're seeing people as people. So I think council, with the Pride in the Park, we weren't the originators of that event.
No, I know.
But we were certainly, I think, probably real facilitators of it. So... And this is one of the things that council, the role of council, isn't necessarily to come up with the good ideas. It's to facilitate and join the dots.
And support.
Mm. And support to the extent that we can those things. But in terms of diversity, I think, you know, it shows a real maturing of our region and probably just society as a whole.
So we've held our hands out to the gay community with Pride, the Yazidi immigrants. I'm going to suggest the next group who need a hand extended to them are our First Nations people in this region.
Mm, sure. Yep, I couldn't agree more.
You'd go with that one?
Yeah.
All right, so back to the water, which you brought up and has been an ongoing topic between you and I. Council has spent $4.3 million. You've signed the official sale contract for... the dam.
We signed...
It's pretty exciting.
Yes, we did. And having signed that, so that was earlier, I think it was the 22nd of January, we signed that. So council now owns Oakey Dam.
Mm-hmm.
During January, and it closed on the 11th of February, we put out expressions of interest for people to come forward with with some suggestions on how they see we could do more with the dam. So it's primarily it's for water security, but what else could be done? Now, we went out there knowing that interest was there because there were a lot of other bidders for the dam. We'd received 21 expressions of interest.
That's a fair number for a project like that, isn't it?
It is a huge number. I spent some time yesterday looking at those expressions of interest and they'll progress through. And some of these were from very storied companies that most of us will have heard of who have said, wow, okay, we would love to be involved in developing this back to what it was or making it more than that. So it was a 5-megawatt hydro system, which is pretty much just like a running tap. The water goes down and out.
And I think that died back in 2013. Yes.
There've been a lot of people, and some, to me, some of the really interesting things have said, well, this is the perfect upper reservoir for a pumped hydro, and that could be a 150 megawatt battery, effectively an 8-hour battery. So, you know, I think already, you know, to get 21 EOIs was pretty special. I think of those, you know, 5, 6, 7 are really serious solutions.
So what this really means is the water security planning, which you and I have talked about, is an actual fact now a reality, and work can begin. As we've also discussed, yep. Our local MP, Adam Marshall, announced a $27 million funding reservation for the raising of the Malpass Dam spillway. That was in the 22-23 New South Wales budget. But Oakey has to come first, doesn't it? Because for Malpass needs to be drained a fair amount of water before the dam raising structural work can begin. So you really need to have Oakey first?
I think we need to have, ideally we need to have Oakey set up first. However, I think if the bouncing ball is going to be, you'd follow where the money is. So there is money for Malpass. If there's, we once we've finished the engineering and tender documents, we'll have real clarity around how long Malpass is going to take to build. Now, it's not a very big project, which is...
And I imagine time of year, depending on rainfall and things like that,
All of those will play in. So Malpass needs to be emptied to 50% of its capacity. Mm. And if it gets to 50, if we're doing that and they say, look, we can build this in 12 months and we can look at that and say, well, we have 12 months worth of between Malpass, the Gyra dams and Puddle Dock. If we can say, well, we actually have more than 12 months or comfortably more than 12 months worth of water supply,
let's go. Fine, but ideally, if the numbers and the money stacks up, then
ideally, yes.
Then Oakey would go first.
So the really, really cautious approach would be for Oakey first. And then you've got a reservoir of water there, so that if the mud really does hit the fan, we now need to, you know, lobby the, and this is another process that we've got running parallel, lobby government for the funding for, you know, repairing Oakey and a pipeline in, and that's a regional water security thing, because it would be beneficial for Yooralla again if we had something akin to the 2019 drought.
As we know, I was just going to bring your mind to that. As we know, the 2019-2020 drought sharpened a lot of people's attention and drew their minds to water. But more than that, you're also motivated with your water planning by a growth target of 4,000 jobs over the next 10 years. That means development and population growth. You have a towards 50,000 plan. Mm-hmm. Not all residents are pleased with this idea, with their community growing to such an extent. How do you sell it to them?
I think if you... I don't...
A big one, sir.
it is a big one.
But it connects with the water, of course, because the water is one of the factors that will allow for this planning, yeah. The 4,000 jobs, the towards 50,000. Mm.
I think there's a few different things that we need to bear in mind. You can't look at each thing in isolation. Part of the growth is we need those extra people to fund all the services that we have. Now, we are capped with the amount of rates that we need, but the individual burden will be lessened if we have more people. So, you know, as I think I've outlined on this program before, if we get an extra 2,000 ratepayers, council doesn't get more rates, because the total dollar amount that we can collect is limited. So there's that. But one of the real reasons for needing more people is to put vibrancy back into the place, because we are a declining population. The state government whose projection is that we will grow at 0.2%.
But you want 50,000 in Armidale.
No, I want to get to 40,000. If we've got to 40,000, we might as well have the planning in place for 50.
Right.
Say for 50. So if we can get to 40, the reason we need to do that is that whilst ever the state government thinks that we are a zero growth area or a 0.2% growth area, which is what a couple of Edwards buses of people leaving, there's not much in it or arriving. Whilst ever the state government thinks that that's what we are, then they're not going to put money into the health, into the police, into the education or anything like that. They are going to put the money into the growing areas. So what I would say to those people who don't want growth, ask yourself, do you want better health outcomes? Do you want better education? Do you want better policing? Do you want better roads? Or are you happy with deterioration? And then no one's going to be happy with deterioration.
So that's the sales pitch, really.
Well, that's the reality. I'm not going to be so patronising to stand in front of someone and say that. If they're concerned about more cars on the road, there are certainly quieter areas of our LGA you can go to.
Yes, but the point I'm making is, as the mayor, you want as much as possible to take the people with you. And I wasn't being patronising. That's the sense in which I meant it.
Of course you do. I also think there won't be a noticeable... If another 10,000 people were safely housed here and comfortably housed, we're not going to have gridlocked roads, we're not going to be having huge supermarket queues or anything like that. What we will know is that shops are popping up and there's more happening. Restaurants are, you know, more confident of patronage. So things will start to emerge that way.
Well, I'm going to throw this out.
Yep.
For this to have a chance of success... We need reliable, regular public transport linking Armidale to Sydney, Newcastle, Brisbane, the coast and ultimately the rest of the country in a way that we don't have at the moment. Mm. And if people come here and they're new arrivals, they will still have connections, family, friends and other places. And if they look at Armidale and see how difficult and expensive it can be getting out and getting back in, I think this is going to cause a problem.
It probably will. Unless we grow, the state government isn't going to put any more money into these things. So we used to have a fairly reliable bus service that got us to Brisbane.
That's gone.
The
aircraft that to Sydney is expensive.
The aircraft to Sydney is expensive. But that's just the reality of living in regional Australia.
Does it have to be?
Well, I don't think it does. But the state government pie is... This is why we need to be a bigger area. Because they're not going to... that said, I think the public buses aren't there, but if we are a bigger region, then it makes sense for private bus companies to come back and, you know, transport out that way.
So we need tickets that become affordable and competitive if we grow.
We do. I don't think that will happen with planes. I think, you know, the airfares are always going to be, you know, up there and a bit out of reach. You know, train is always going to be cheaper.
But we do know that each time there's been a competitor airline in Armidale, Qantas have found a way to lower their prices, and each time the competitor goes, they suddenly...
Fancy that.
Put them up. Isn't that a surprise?
Yeah, isn't it?
And that's called the market. But I don't know that it's necessarily useful to Armidale, application of the market. I read your mayoral minute. Mm. And I wondered if there was a little playing politics involved. It's called cost shifting onto local government. We know the feds do this to the states, then the state, they do that with health and education. Then the states do that to the councils. What caught my eye was the sentence, the unrelenting growth of cost shifting to councils coupled with rate pegging is increasingly eroding, so on and so on. On the 15th of June last year, the Independent Pricing and Regulatory Tribunal approved a permanent 58.8% over 3 years increase in rates, and yet you said coupled with rate pegging. Is that a little disingenuous?
I think you're conflating two things there.
The cap and, yes, I understand, and the individual.
The cap and the expense, I'm not sure where you'd... disingenuity is coming from. So let's talk about what you raised first, which was the cost shifting. And he said, you know, the feds push it down to the states, push it on to council. Yeah. Really roughly, and I heard this stat and it was put up at a conference I was at, but something in the order of councils provide over 40% of services that an individual or a community uses, yet we collect 3% of the tax, in inverted commas.
And can I just quickly say, by the way, I'm a supporter of council, and if we need to lose one of our three areas of government, in my mind, it would be state.
Yes. Oh,
just I'm sure we're on the same page.
We are. So where I'm getting at is that we are required to provide more, but we have to go with the begging bowl to the state government to deliver it. So they're saying, you do this, and we'll determine whether we actually give you money to do it. Mm-hmm. And that's what the cost shifting is. So I don't have the notes in front of me, but I think it's in the region of $1.36 billion worth of expenses have been shifted from state onto local government, which equates to about $460 per ratepayer. So what I guess this mayoral minute that went out, it was a bit of a coordinated one. So the local LGNSW, Local Government New South Wales, which is the industry body, had asked every council to put together a minute and push it out. Because for us and pretty much every council, particularly in regional areas, the costs of delivering services is rising, and then the state government puts more requirements onto you, largely roads, for example. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't have Kempsey Road.
And we know this. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? When you look at the areas of high density, the cost of infrastructure, be it roads, electricity, whatever, per citizen is much lower because you have the density of population.
That's right.
Whereas in the regional areas, without the density, the cost per individual becomes much higher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have emergency services levies on top of that. There's the an amount that we need to carry the cost of the rural fire service or rural fire brigade. All of this, you know, those red fleet costs add up, and these are over things that we don't really have control over. So that's what the mayoral minute was about.
I was just curious about the unrelenting growth of cost shifting coupled with rate paying.
Oh, I see.
At a time when
58.8%
over 3 years increase.
Okay, so rate pegging, and I apologise for those listeners that are already across this, the state government will determine, or IPART will determine, the total amount or the percentage that you can increase your total rate pool by. And so the first year I came in on council in 2022, the rate peg was 0.7%. They said you can increase your total revenue by 0.7%. Inflation was running at about 6%, but then for the sorts of services that councils use, contractors, materials, etc., that inflation rate was well above 10%.
Yep.
So by having cost shifting coming down, your costs—it really comes down to your costs are increasing at a far quicker rate than your ability to generate
to rates,
revenue.
Yeah. Now I understand that, and I understand the pegging, but I just thought we'd create some clarity for the listeners because not everyone will understand that.
And so
people are aware of the special rate increase,
they are,
and they don't think about the other part.
No, and so it's because of that that we had to do the special rate increase, and I guess also the process to actually set your rates to cover your expenses is quite a torturous one, and in a lot of different uses of that word. I mean, you have to go out there and be publicly flogged. So you have to be really certain you're going to do it. And not every council has the stomach for it. They'll just let their services fall apart. They just won't do things. And knowing, which is effectively kicking the can down the road. And that's what we thought enough was enough. Walker thought enough was enough. Tenterfield thought enough was enough. Well, now in this, at the moment, Tamworth's going through a similar process. I think you'll see, I think 17 councils last financial year applied for an SRV. And of those 17, 14 were successful in its entirety. Some of those are pretty high, like up to 90% increases. So 14 of the 17 were successful in everything they were asking for. I suspect there'll be a lot more than 17 going for an SRV.
There's an interesting...
An even greater number after the September elections.
Yes, and the three that failed may well have failed on the quality of the application rather than than the need. Let's make that clear.
Or I think one of them got a partial increase. Mm.
There's an interesting comment in marketing and business which says that if customers are happy with the product or service, over time they forget the price. If you're happy with what you've got, then you forget the price. So I guess what this means, applying it to council, is having got the increase, now you have to deliver.
We sure do.
and hope that principle applies in this area as well.
Yes, and look, if we were to think, well, what will happen, what are we looking forward to this, say, calendar year, are those services improving?
Yeah.
That's what we're here to do.
We have a number of renewable power projects in the area. You mentioned that earlier. Australia's Energy Infrastructure Commissioner Andrew Dyer says developers are creating mistrust towards the renewable rollout in the regions. He's released a report that calls for states and territories to better plan and control who builds those projects. He says energy companies prospecting for potential wind and solar projects are causing distrust, uncertainty and anxiety. You and I both know there's a lot of false information and data being spread for political purposes. Does Armidale Council need to try and control the narrative in this region? And if so, how do you do that?
Yeah, it's interesting you say control the narrative. We probably haven't controlled the narrative to date. We've certainly tried to grab the tiger by the tail in terms of the behaviour and the expectation of developers. And I've spoken about that on numerous occasions via the group.
But this is a slightly different question, isn't it?
Yeah, but controlling the narrative, that is something that we are in, not necessarily council, but that COREM group. I don't think any council would do well going one out, but we do need a single source of truth, and that is what is sadly lacking. So at the moment, the truth, in inverted commas, are vested interests, depending on where you sit. So we are in the throes of completing a website for the COREM group that the councils can direct, you know, their web pages to, that just gives an update of what the projects are, where they are, what it means, etc. Now, whether I don't think councils should be getting involved and forming an opinion on, say, nuclear versus not nuclear or anything like that.
No, I was more thinking about the wind and solar. I mean, there is some complete scientific BS being put out there by people for political purposes and reasons, and it was much more that narrative I was thinking about rather than the policy narrative.
I think so, but then again, I don't think you're going to change... It would be really useful probably for the 80% of people who don't have a vested interest and are curious to find out what's going to happen. And I think that COREM group can do that. For example, you know, they're taking away our farmland. Well, no, the owners of the properties give consent to these things to be built there.
Correct. And I was reading some interesting material which talked about for sheep farmers who are letting their land be used for large-scale solar, they're just making the solar panels slightly higher. The sheep are grazing underneath them. They're not losing pasture, and the sheep are actually getting protection from sun and rain. So some of the arguments, for example, being used around that are totally wrong. So, I mean, I was more talking about then there'll be roads everywhere, roads will be built on your property and you won't have a say about it. I mean, this is the sort of thing that the organisation was talking about, the commissioner was talking about, and I guess those were some of the narratives I was thinking about. But I take your point, maybe councils need to work together with this and not...
I think the councils need to have a consistent message about things that are factual, and then anything that is, you know, open to interpretation or very subjective, I'll just leave that for people to to sort out.
But
themselves.
Our council is going out there with renewables. You know, you've got some good projects happening,
well,
and that's why
that's in our LGA.
Yes.
And so probably the thing that I would like to leave your listeners with is that council doesn't have a say whether these things happen or not. Sorry, we can influence, but we can't stop it. So I have had somebody at a meeting saying, da, 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 why don't you just stop it? And I said, well, because we can't for all these reasons. And I said, what do you suggest we do? She goes, oh, no, I'd just stop it. And I went, well, okay. Well,
if except we're in, you can't.
Except you can't. So in the world of make-believe, you can. But in reality,
and that's
you
why
can't.
I was talking about the narrative, yeah. Because this is the narrative rather than the reality, and that's where I was going.
Yeah,
with
that. Yeah, and there is a role to play, but I think council, I don't think council should be take political positions on anything. We need to be as agnostic as possible, and facts are facts. So. You know, there's one clever chap says to me, you're entitled to your own opinions, but you're not entitled to your own facts.
No, indeed.
But so facts are facts. So we could put that up there. But I think if there is a website, and if this CoREM website, sorry, when the CoREM website's up and running, if that becomes a place where councils direct traffic.
And let people know it's there.
And let people know it's there. If you want to find out more about a particular project, here it is. What are the downsides of this, that and the other thing? Here it is.
Sam, thank you as always for coming in. And I know that was a slightly curly one to leave you with at the end, but these are topics of conversation in the community as we make the change to more renewables as we're doing here. Thank you very much for coming in. I've been talking with Sam Copeland, Mayor of Armidale Regional Council, and you'll hear the next instalment in about a month's time after the next council meeting. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Paul.